When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? You're some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Friends, fans, followers, leaders, and true believers, I'm here with
Paul Schumann.
Paul Schumann's a Navy chaplain, and was my chaplain once upon a time in a good old amphibious construction battalion, too, in Virginia Beach. Man, I was going through some hard times, too, man. I went through one of my best friend's suicides and going through a divorce, and you were our chaplain then, so you're definitely a good near and dear friend of my heart. And yeah, man, so what's it like being a chaplain, and what do you do? Because some people listening to this are like, I have no clue. The other people are like, come on, you fucking idiot. Everybody knows what a chaplain does. Pardon my French. I'm sorry. Please bless my my words that I say in your house. I apologize ahead of time.
Sorry, yeah, you're having a conversation with a chaplain. All of a sudden, you're speaking French. Yeah. Sorry. But no, I just want to say that it's been great just to see you again.
Yeah.
I just absolutely mean that. I was just driving back from the restaurant just thinking, man, it's just really good to see Josh. You know, just really just bring back some good memories. You know, even though I know a lot of time when you were there, you're going through some rough times, but you know, just appreciate the friendship.
We had a homeless homies help day, is what I used to call it. Like, I'd always try to get people to help out with the homeless, you know?
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'd get them. And, you know, and that was one thing, like, some people got mad at me because I didn't drop, you know, there's paperwork for an award. For volunteer service thing.
Outstanding volunteer service.
And it was like, why don't you do that? And I'm like, because I didn't do it for a medal. You know what I mean? Like, I did it because I wanted to do it. And then I retired without that ribbon. I probably did more volunteer service than anybody.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, I didn't think it was worth putting on paper. You know?
And just to explain the background, this a Jewish temple in Virginia Beach that once a month would open up their doors to feed lunch to the homeless. And Josh was there. He was the point man, greeting people right as they came in, just making sure they felt welcome. And just became a very, very much regular at that at that event.
Let's be honest there, chaps. greeting people is a loose term because, like, I was more along the lines of roasting some people. Because, you know, some people, they don't get that humor. So I was basically Jeff Ross at the front door of these guys when they're coming in, just talking trash, you know, like, hey man, yo, I got some financial advice. I was like, dude, you're probably the last person to give me any financial advice, and then laugh, you know. And obviously, you know, who to say things like that to and who not to. Yeah. But yeah, and then that was pretty cool.
No, I'm sure they appreciated that because, like you said, most times people either keep their distance or wouldn't engage in that level of humor because they think, oh, you know, this is someone who's down on their luck, kid glove care, and not that kind of. Love that you're dishing out, I'm sure.
Well, that's the thing, too. I think a lot of times in tragedy or in bad times, or, you know, or you're just going through a lull in life, you don't want people to be like, I feel so bad for you. You know, there's some people that need that sympathy and them hugs and extra hugs and them kid gloves and that love, but most people are like, dude, you really sound condescending right now. You're trying too hard. And that's what, like, I tried to give... Because I had some of the reoccurring guys. That one dude who looked like, he looked like Eazy-E. He looked like homeless Eazy-E. He's my homie, man.
Now, and one, you know, when you talk about being condescending and, you know, people not appreciating that, one guy, he didn't even like the term homeless.
Right.
He said, you know, like,
no, I'm not so homeless, less, man. Like, yeah. I was just like, yeah. I was like, oh, shoot. Yeah. Because it's like, because I called it Homeless Homies Help Day, and he was a good guy, man. Matter of fact,
right. He'd always stay in afterwards and help clean up.
And, he'd come hang out. He'd hang out with me outside. He's like, hey, man, you know, some people aren't homeless. And the funny thing is, I was talking one-on-one with him. I'm like, so where you live? Well, I really don't have a place right now. I was like, okay, you know. Right on. I will remember. Don't call every, you know. But, yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly. But no, to get back to your question about being a chaplain, absolutely love it. I became an Army Reserve chaplain in 2010,
okay.
And then came over to Navy 2 years later after one deployment to Afghanistan. I've only deployed twice, though. I remember.
Well, yeah,
eight deployments for you—that's a lot.
Yeah, but your deployments, you know, some pretty ballsy things, you know.
Actually, they're pretty cushy. They're pretty cushy. But anyway, I just love being a chaplain. I think part of it is a big part of it is just trying to be around, to be available in the event that somebody needs somebody to talk to. I get paid to just really enjoy making friends with people.
Right.
Trying to be there when somebody needs to talk about some difficult things. That's the biggest part of the job. Certainly there's the religious piece where, especially here in 29 Palms with the Marine Corps.
And the 500 Christian channel that you have. Jeez, oh, peace.
But our workups for deployment are, I mean, we spend about 2 months in the field just between a few different exercises. So there's a lot of Bible studies and worship services that we did out in the field. But actually, more of it was just, hey, how can I see what these infantry guys do
right. So
that I can, be better able to relate to them and their world. And so some of that is standing up on a hill and the wind's blowing and it's cold. And I use an MRE heater.
Right.
I popped a couple of them throughout the course of the night just to try to keep warm. Just watching them execute this range at the company level during the night when they're using mortars and machine guns and rifles to kill these fake bad guys.
Right.
But, so just kind of getting into their world.
As a, I guess, enlisted grunt guy, you know, I mean, digging fighting positions and hiding out there. We called them foxholes back in the day. But after you're out there in the freezing cold and all that, and you have a chaplain, because like I was saying before, you have the chaplain that's like there to help, and then the other one's there to get promoted. You know, and you're always one of the ones to help. And you can tell a difference. And the cool thing, I think, not just as chaplains, but as any kind of leadership whatsoever, is when you can walk out along the lines and hang out with the guys and talk to them. I mean, obviously establish the role that you play. You know what I mean? Like, they all know that you're a chaplain first, right? And then, you know, we're buddy-buddy and stuff. You know, as far as leadership goes, you know your first class, second class, third class, whatever the leadership position is, master, chief, whatever. But after you get that out of the way, they're like, this guy really does care because he's toeing the line, man. He's hanging out with us. It's like freaking 2 a.m. with coffee, and he's out here with MRE heaters in his hands, you know. Hey, and those are the guys that, you know, they could be back in a cush, like freaking, you know, rear area somewhere relaxing and, you know, coming out and hanging out. It always means a lot, you know. And then I think that translates to people being you being approachable, you know what I mean? Like, that gives you, like, people will come and be like, you know what, chaplain's cool, he understands, blah blah blah. And you're also putting yourself out there, you know.
And it always seemed like a little bit goes a long way. And that's what I explained to my chaplain assistant or religious program specialist out in Virginia Beach. I said, you know, we go out there on a cold day. People will talk about that for however long. And it becomes
forever.
A fish story. You know, that here in 29 Palms with 1st Battalion, 7th Marines, in their little farewell, you know, they're saying, oh, yeah, that chaplain, he was out in the field probably more than most people in the battalion.
Yeah.
There's no way that's true, you know.
Right.
But at least they saw me out there, and so a little bit kind of stretched a long ways just to hopefully make myself approachable so that if they did need to talk, that I'd be around. And doggone, I had a lot of fun watching them blow stuff up.
Oh, I bet.
Shoot stuff. It was really fun.
Shoot, I bet, man. Like, one of the things that I always thought was cool too is being, I mean, having a chaplain like you, I mean, obviously, I had my issues, and I could talk and stuff like that with you, and but you kept the same number, you know, that you've had way back then, still on my phone, you know, which and I think that's cool because, like, if you ever haven't, I mean, if you're listening to this and you're a leader right now and you're wearing a uniform, you know, I would just text you and be like, hey man, why don't you swing by the steel shop at like 3:30 in the afternoon? I got Crumby, I was throwing a name out there. I got Crumby, Jones, Smith, you know, Schmickenpalmer, whatever. They could probably use your conversation, man. Just to, and then that's what was cool, because I would text you or call you or say, hey man, can you still swing by? And you would. You know, like we'd have a guy going through either captain's mask or, I don't know, stealing a bayonet or something silly. And then you'd pop in and you'd talk to the guys, and it looked like you weren't even supposed to be there. You just be like, or like, all right, just walking through. You'd be like, oh, cool, man.
Now, that's to me, that's a sign of a good leader that will know what's going on with this guy. So I always appreciated, you know, your leadership in helping me do my job. As you know, as we were talking about earlier, when you got 1,000+ guys that you're supposed to support.
Yeah.
The only real way that the support is effective is if the leadership is letting me know what's going on.
And that's the thing too, like for being a CB, like when I came in, I think 750 was a total ballpark average number of a Naval Mobile Construction Battalion. Now I think it's ballpark like 556. I'm not exactly sure anymore. I'd have to look at Wikipedia. I'm sure somebody leaked that out on the internet. So like, you know, but when you were at the beach group, about how many people do you think you had there?
Oh, I mean, if you're, you know, when the reserves would come and everything, I mean, I think it was 1,600 people, if I remember right. It was quite a few.
So you're talking 3-4 times the amount as a mobile battalion, CB mobile battalion for there. And that's just, you know, so being able to realize that there's all this stuff. What's some of the craziest stuff that you've seen or some of the coolest?
Let's
go with a big wide spectrum there.
Let's see. Some of the craziest is the... I think about the exercise we did when it was February, and some of the COs within the beach group were saying, it's too cold. We can't do it, you know? And
yeah.
Of course, Captain, our Commodore at the time, hey, man, it's what's going to be like in North Korea. If that pops off, so we're going to do it. So the temperature being around zero in Virginia Beach, especially colder on the water, seeing all the guys in the puffy suits. I enjoyed that. One of the craziest things I saw, again, I have had a pretty cushy existence in the military. I have not seen, you know, a lot of the stuff you've seen, only heard about it. But one of the craziest things, just from this last deployment, the MV-22, the Osprey, would take us around from place to place, typically. And just watching the gunner out the back on the 50 cal machine gun, and he's tethered to the aircraft that's got, you know, it's like back hatch is open. It's like driving a hatchback with a hatchback
right
at, you know, 80 miles down the highway, and, you know, it's real loud in there. But looking at his tether, and it's only one little link that's keeping him from flying out the back.
And then, like, after that, you think about all the safety precautions you go through for everything else in the military.
Right.
And that's the funny thing is, like, I'm glad you've seen that, because you can understand the frustration that goes through everybody else when you come home. And then, like, when you're home, you got, like, a billion freaking safety things and this, that, and the other thing. But when you're going through either an exercise or, you know, real-life situation, you're like, dude, I got to get this done. And that's it, you know?
Yeah, one of the helo rides that I took, and I think this was just during one of the training exercises, and this guy just lean out of the helicopter, lean out. I'm like, that guy has no fear. And then I did see that he was tethered. I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, there you go. Then next thing you know, he's hanging like,
holy smokes.
Oh, okay, there, that's what it is.
But then in one of the training exercises with CBs, watching them offload an MPF ship, and having to go from one small craft to another, and, you know, one's up and one's down with the, you know, the way the water is rising and falling, and I just thought, man.
Well, Jacksonville, was that the Jacksonville, Florida one? Or?
Yes. Yeah, the Big X. So that was
that was in my mind. I thought, wow, what these guys do is inherently dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, if I were to, you know, make one wrong step and get smashed in between the big ship and that small craft, that'd be the end of me. That'd be it.
I definitely missed the people. I didn't kind of, and I'm not saying anything bad. I won't say anything bad about the way the regular Navy is, but I missed the mentality of being around Seabees. You know what I mean? Like more Seabees than there, because it was just the bosun mates and stuff like that were freaking awesome, and the Seabees were awesome. There just seemed like there was a tug of war between who was running what. You know what I mean? In that place. And the funny thing is, like, at where I am as a, you know, where I was as a first class, where I was a first class, the rest of us, the bosun mate, you know, first classes and me being a steelworker, we kind of felt that way. Like, we were best friends, like, on this level here. And it's just like, why are you guys up there doing this?
Right, yeah.
You know, we're trying to get this job done. But anyways, it's so much different now because they changed the companies. Like, you know, everything is either Alpha is CB, Bravo is boats. That's how it is. There's no Charlie company. It's they thin the herd at two.
So now everybody wears a billion hats then.
Yeah, over there, yeah. But they're, I don't think they're... I hope their workload isn't as big as it was when we
there's were, no way that you could still no, meet mission. I'm sure they would have to adjust the mission when they change it to a reserve command.
The FIM in San Diego, same thing. But, I mean, I would never trade a day. I mean, one of my I think the easiest job I had was being an instructor, and we talked about it before on the podcast.
I remember you came over to Beach Group, and they gave one of your classes.
Yeah, like they didn't have a – you guys – when I say you guys, I mean, I was attached to you guys, but they didn't have an instructor for Naval NP or Navy Prime Professionalism for INDOC, basically.
Right, that's what it was.
And it was
it
was like you're supposed to have it either when you check in or annual. I forget what the criteria is. Forgive me, guys. But yeah, I had to go there, and I thought, you know, I had everybody from a captain in there to like freaking, you know, some Johnny Nonary just showed up in some of them classes. The cool thing was when you have senior leadership, they get it, they understand. I'm like, do I need to elaborate? No. Okay, cool. Because everybody's got like, they all got a meeting or they want to get to their booze. One of the two, you know.
Well, yeah, at their Beach Group, everybody was on the verge of retirement pretty
much.
So.
Yes.
I prayed it. I don't know how many retirement ceremonies there was.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Should have came to mind. No, I'm just kidding. You didn't probably know when it was.
Wish I could have.
I did a roast retirement ceremony at the Comedy Store.
Yeah. I remember you posting about that online.
That's right. No, I live on the Facebooky. What's some other stuff that, you know, that you've done or you've gone through? I mean, obviously we can't give names. And we, you know, I don't want to, if there's any ongoing things, and, you know, please don't put yourself in a situation. I know you're smarter than that, but obviously it's my disclaimer, you know, from Joshua's radio show to you. That's the last thing I want to do. But like some of the cool stuff or some hard stuff that you've gone through, just, you know, because you've seen the entire spectrum. You know, the military, from, you know, the best thing to watch people having their babies to people passing away. You know, I mean, there's got to be something that really sticks out.
Right. One thing that stands out is a couple of sailors that were with me. We had, I'm trying to remember which, I think he was in one of the assault craft units. He passed away, and he was down in Florida at the time visiting his wife, and we heard that he wasn't doing so well, so we drove down there, and a couple of guys from ACU2 went with me. I was just so impressed with those two sailors, how supportive they were of that spouse. We got there literally when they told the spouse that he wasn't going to make it, and you know, they were right there to be there in her moment of crisis.
Right.
And that was, you know, I can't imagine what it would have been like to be in her shoes, but I really appreciated those two sailors being there. You know, we stayed there for a little while, and you know, just the rapport that they built with the family to make sure that all their needs were taken care of. I was really impressed with how they conducted themselves so that this spouse could get the care and support she needed. One of the personally, one of the hardest things was going from, you know, 80 degrees-ish temperatures in Virginia right. Beach to out here. Well, I came out last summer, and
we're in Yucca Valley, 29 Palms area.
Right.
Beach to this place.
Right, and it was June 3rd. And when I got on base, the temperature is 108 degrees.
Jeez.
And I just thought, man, I see all these people walking around outside. I didn't understand how they hadn't burst in flames yet. But, I just thought, this is hot. I don't know if I can do this. And then later, after being here for a little bit, I realized that 108 degrees wasn't that bad. It was when it got up into the 110s. Oh.
Probably made life in Kuwait a lot easier for you then.
Right, yeah, because you're right. Then you go to the Middle East and you realize that there's something hotter still.
Yeah, it's like, you're kind of already somewhat conditioned.
Then where you see 125, you go, oh, gosh.
And I think what they do there is they can't advertise over 114 or 140. I forget what it is. There's a secret number that they will never say it's over. Because they'll be like, I think it's 115, so they'll say it's 114 or whatever. Because that means they have to send everybody home from the factories.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's 114 today out here in, you know, Buka Buka Duka Duka out here in whatever country.
Wait. Now, I remember the first field exercise when I got here, and I think it was late July, early August, so just in the middle of blistering heat. I still hadn't been to the hot part of the Middle East yet.
Yeah.
Afghanistan's not really the Middle East. It's more Southwest Asia. I remember parking my car at Camp Wilson and thinking, all right, I'm going to enjoy my AC for as long as I can. Kiss it goodbye for the next few days.
Yeah, well.
But my wife asked me, she's like, wow, you're going to be out there with no air conditioning? Like, man, how are you gonna do that? I said, that's all right. I'll be out there with the guys. You know, we'll just do it together. And sure enough, it was just great opportunities for... That's when I started really getting to know people.
Yeah.
Because people are not distracted with other stuff. Just focus on what you're doing out in the field. And I really enjoyed that part of it. And it cools off at night, so you can sleep.
That's like, I think a lot of it too, it's funny if you think about it like this, but if you keep life in your left and your right lateral limits, and you just live within your left and your right lateral limit, you're going to be very fine. And that's kind of like you're out in a fighting position. That's the same stuff, you know? Mm. You just stay within your lane of fire, and you're good. And it just, you know, obviously you eat a lot of MREs that you don't sure. You know,
I remember seeing one of our Marines, and I think he's about a year and a half away from retirement, and every time we go on a field exercise, he was always eating canned food. He would never eat the MREs. And I asked him, I said, hey, you know what, well, how come you never eat the MREs? He's like, man, we would go months at a time and only eating MREs out in Iraq. He said, yeah. I just can't eat them anymore.
No, there's like, yeah, if you're on like some of these FOBs, man. And that's what I love. When I was in battalion, I used to work in MC, Naval Mobile Construction Battalion 40, in like 06, 07, and 08. I was in those, deployed between those years off and on. And you go to different Marine Corps FOBs and a lot of SEAL teams. FOBs and stuff like that. You can help these guys out. And that's it, man. SEALs usually had a little bit more of whatever they wanted. You know,
they got the blank check budget.
Pretty much, yeah. And they got like extra CBs if they ever needed them. You know, and same with the Marines. And, you know, like the Marines was a little bit harder of a FOB, you know. Like, and then you watch like...
Oh, hang on one sec.
Message. One. Boom, 11 minutes. I'll remember that marker. All right. So, because you go to some of these FOBs, and then the Marines, they don't live so nice. You know what I mean?
You may have run across some of these Marines. I don't.
I had a lot
of these guys, I think, were in Ramadi.
Yeah. I spent most of my time in Fallujah. And then, my stuff stayed in Fallujah, and I stayed in Ramadi, too.
Okay.
Well, speaking of Ramadi and air conditioning, well, my buddies, he spent almost his entire time in Ramadi. I'll have him talk about the story later because it's his story, not mine. But, you know, in air conditioning, like, they had a bunch of SEAL team guys. They live in the same building, Full Metal Jacket. They call the building because it looked like the building in Full Metal Jacket, right? And a Corregidor, you know. And, you know, I go through there every once in a while on a convoy and say what's up to the guys. I was trying to acquire materials, sometimes welding rods, sometimes grinding wheels. I would go wherever I could and acquire things. But yeah, like one, their air conditioner went out. But the thing was, is they're holding their bed up with freaking bullets, like boxes of ammo and all this other stuff, right? And he's like, "Hey, dude, did you guys give us an AC? You guys got an AC unit?" And they're like, "Oh, I guess you can have ours." So they gave, because they had one coming anyway. There's like one to be there. They it took them like 3 days, so they went without air conditioning, so that these guys didn't have a cook off in their room. You know, that
was awesome. I don't think I spent one night both deployments in a non-climate controlled room. That's how cushy my deployments were. One last thing I wanted to just share about the first field exercise I went on. I asked one of the company commanders, "Hey, you know, I'd like to have a religious service for your guys." He said, "Oh, you know, there's a classroom out there, out in a training area we could use." Oh, sweet. So I got there. Of course, it's air conditioned. Boy, we had 80 guys show up for worship service.
It's amazing how much people love Jesus and the air conditioning. Right. That's one thing you probably miss about being deployed with CBs, though, because no matter where you go, it's like, "Hey, I need air conditioning." That's why everybody loves us, man. Did you ever make it to, like, we did AP Hill, and we did, yes. We did that one, and we did a couple other ones. Did you ever make it out there?
I only made it, I think I went to AP Hill, did I go twice? Might have gone twice. Yeah.
But yeah, you didn't have to stay up there. You just kind of hung out for a little bit, right?
No, I slept up there.
Oh, cool.
The only, the first time I had intended to stay the whole time, but then I think there was a death in one of the units, and so I had to go back. I think I was out there for probably 5 days or so.
Well, that's the thing. Like we were talking about earlier, you had 1,500 people. Ballpark,
right?
Yeah, you know, so
reserves.
Yeah, it wasn't like you were just attached to our battalion. You're attached to a battalion, two assault craft units,
beach
groups, yeah, beach masters unit, beach group, all that. You had a lot of places, man. That's great,
right? But I was, you know, the Commodore was always really supportive. I'm like, "Hey, sir, you know, can I go out with the CBs on their field op?" He's like, "Oh yeah, absolutely." So.
Speaking of that, I remember like when I was my job was to train people to stay alive and go kill them. Remember that? And so like I would just pop up out of nowhere and you'd just be hanging out. That I thought that was cool because we had some snowy freaking days in the back end of like 400 Leggett, not 400 Leggett, it's the back end of Little Creek. Remember that? And then and then I was killing the good guys, you know, and then they're and you were just walking through. Yeah, you were just walking through being chaplain. Checking stuff out in the cold.
Oh, man. That was a good time. Yeah, I remember the one filled off with everybody in the puffy suits. We did a little hot chocolate, hot apple cider ministry. And I'm trying to remember one of the chiefs. Oh, yeah, she gave me the nickname Chapel Cider.
Chapel Cider. Nice.
Those are always the bonding experiences when there's a rough condition and a rough situation. That's what people want to talk about. That's what they remember.
Yeah, it's like that years later, nothing was ever as good or sucked as bad. You know what I mean? It was just like it was the best and the worst of it. You know, that's how everything starts. You know.
Yep.
And that's funny, and I think that's like back in the day. I mean, you get into a fist fight with somebody, and 3 days later, you're best friends. You know what I mean? Or any kind of a verbal altercation or whatever, and you're kind of like, "Oh, this guy ain't messing around." You know, and you get to test each other's mettle. But when you go through that stuff, it's kind of bypassing the whole, you know, testing each other's mettle because you kind of live through this adversity.
Right.
Like any.
Well, actually, do you mind if I ask you a question?
Of course, ask away.
So, how's things with your process of civilianization, just as far as your overall outlook on life? How's it developing since you've left the military?
Oh, that's a good question. I think what happens is, and this is my honest opinion on most people that serve, especially if you do 20, even if you do 5, it doesn't matter, you know, If you did like just one enlistment, it don't matter. That or an entire career, just a little bit more rings around the tree of, you know, when you get out. But I try to compare the career, multi-career, as being a train conductor, right? And you're a subway conductor in New York. It's easier to put it, right? So you stop, people get on the train, people get off the train, and you go. And then, you know, people get on the train. Now, that's you developing troops. That's you making it, being a leader. That's you, like, obviously, somebody's telling you the directions where the train needs to go, what track to take, right? But you're conducting that train. So you're obviously following directions, but at the same time, you're taking people with you. And you're trying to bring as many people as possible with you to wherever you go. And you keep doing that until the day it's time to turn the train in. And you walk away and you get your little gold watch. And you retire and you put your train in the train yard. You know what I'm saying? But the thing is this. The train never stops moving. Somebody else conducts that train after you leave. You know what I mean? Somebody else comes in for you and you're gone. And that train keeps on going. But the thing is the people always remember who conducted the train, who had the bumpiest ride, who helped them along on the ride. You know what I'm saying? So they're the ones, they'll still reach out and be like, man, I wish you were still conducting this train. You know what I mean? And then they'll still ask you for directions because you know how to get places faster. And I think that's what it is. And the hard part is you're a train conductor for 3, 5, 20 years. And it's just like trying to figure out where you fit. Like in the military, like, you know, for until you transfer to San Diego, you know exactly what you're going to make on the 1st and the 15th. You know exactly where your car is going to be parked. You know exactly where you're going to stand if there's a formation. You know exactly where you're going to be 3 weeks from right now. Like, almost to the minute. Exactly. Especially what you're going to wear, you know, and what's going to look good when you wear it, too.
Right.
And especially with you being here on a Marine Corps base. Oh, my goodness. That better pop. But that's it. And then it's just kind of trying to figure out where your place is. And I'm still trying to, you know, that book, Move My Cheese. Still trying to find my cheese. Mm. I think I found it, but I keep wanting to go. Fortunate enough to do that, you know, walk away from there. Now doing stand-up comedy, and I work at 95.5 KLOS, and I love it. It's pretty cool. Just a promotions department. I don't make a whole lot of money, but I don't care. Because, like, I work for Steve Jones, or work with Steve Jones, not for, but with Steve Jones, you know, one of the founders of the Sex Pistols. Meet all kinds of rock and roll stars all the time, and it's just like, this is so cool. Like, some of my idols are friends now, you know what I mean? Like, Rock and Roll Hall of Famers are texting me about albums. You know, I'm like, is this real life?
When I see a lot of your posts on Facebook, I'm like, all right, it's going to be somebody famous that he's taking a selfie with.
They got videos of me and Chris Jericho doing a wrestling commentator. I was playing Mean Gene Okerlund with him. I was basically doing Mean Gene Okerlund with Chris Jericho to get Steve Jones. I get Jericho on Jones's radio show. But yeah, man, it's fun. I mean, working at a rock and roll station, helping out rock stars. It's weird. It's a whole new life. And I hang in the Comedy Store in West Hollywood. That's how I end every night. If people want to find me, just about every night I'm hanging out down there doing absolutely nothing after I did 10, 15 minutes of comedy somewhere else in the valley. You know, I'm just grinding it. Comedy is the same thing as the military. You go up the ranks, right? You know, so that's the thing. Like, I'm, you know, I'm not really a headlining comic, not at all. You know, I'm an MC and I can feature, and I'm working on, you know, becoming to that next level of, you know, headlining. And
right.
I don't think I ever want to be stadium worthy. You know what I mean? I don't want to be that famous. After reading Born Standing Up, you know, it's Stephen Wright. Steve Martin's book, Born Standing Up, really good. And he talks about, like, how when he back in the day, he would sell coliseums, and, you know, jeez. And it's just like, who wants to be that famous? You know what I mean? Like, for real. Like, it, and I'll tell you what, chaps, honestly, I think it's really cool. Like, I don't necessarily live in coach anymore when it comes to concerts and stuff like that. I don't make a whole lot of money, like I said before, but the cool thing is I know a guy that knows a guy. I can always text somebody.
Right.
You know, I can get into concerts for free. I usually don't have to wait in lines. And, you know, and that's pretty cool, you know, I guess.
But now you're, I know you've been doing comedy for years. Do you feel like your work as a comic has helped you cope with the transition from military to civilian?
Extremely. Yeah, extremely. Like, when, yeah, I mean, I my as a comic, it didn't help me to cope just as a civilian. It helped me cope with life. I mean, remember, like, Sean, when Sean killed himself, he's my best friend, you know, one of my best friends. Is that, you know, yeah, me, Brian, Shelby, Travis.
Because I remember like, you posted that picture, like, on the stairway.
Yeah, man. And that was Travis Carl. Well, there's, like, a lot of comics we used to hang out all the time, you know. And there was, like, different cliques of comics in Virginia Beach, and we were like the anti-clique, you know what I'm saying? So we didn't really hang with those guys. We just kind of like hung with ourselves, you know what I'm saying? I think I'm the only one, only sober dude in the bunch, which is my past judgment. I drink beer now, so I definitely can't. But it was cool, and Sean was a vet, you know, but he didn't want to be remembered as a vet, and he was a damn good comic. And that picture, it means a lot to me because, like, one of my favorite things, we were talking trash to each other. We're getting ready to, like, you know, hockey players, they'll smack each other on the pads before they go out and they leave the hallway to before they walk out into the arena. They have that last minute in the locker room. And, you know, that was kind of like our last minute because the MC was about ready to bring one of us up or,
right, you know, each other geared up.
Yeah, and we're just like, dude, this is cool. I'm just like, I'm getting limber. And then, yeah, and then that was like one of my favorite places to shoot the shit with, you know, with them. So yeah, and then picture of him, one of the pictures is Sean in the bottom of the stairs, me doing a selfie like with him in the back sitting on the chair, and he's like doing the like the Slayer finger horns, or maybe they're doing the hang loose with the finger pinky, and then the next one was a couple months after he died, and I took that other selfie, and you know, but that was it. Like, I remember, do you remember this? Like, you came in that one day, and you're like, so SW1, are you gonna be okay? And I was like, it's like, yeah, man, I'll be all right. Don't worry, I ain't gonna hang myself. That means one more person has to let me down.
That's right. I remember you telling that joke.
Yeah. And then you looked at me like you are right now, which I wish you could see this, guys. And you just said, "Oh, I should not laugh at this." Oh, yeah. That was the best. So stand-up comedy was my therapy, and it still is. And matter of fact, when I was in Okinawa, my doc was he was in the Corps, he was a lieutenant. He was like, SW1, you need I recommend that you go see somebody for your PTSD and stuff like that. But that's how I was dealing with everything, you know what I mean? Like, stand-up comedy was it. And when you and I were at the FIB, I set this on stage at a comedy show in Portsmouth at it was an Italian restaurant we used to do comedy in, right? And I said, if I didn't have a microphone in my hand, I'd have a gun in my mouth. And I meant that as a joke, and it was true. And I was talking about it therapeutically, and it was a good thing. But when you translate that into Facebook, it doesn't work so much. Dougie Heiner, Command Master Chief of the FIB in San Diego, is like, hey, SWO, hey, Obi, are you good, dude? You all right? I'm getting text messages from here and there. Farmer, remember Derek Farmer? Good guy.
Oh,
he was a CM1.
Yeah.
Hey, good guy, man. He was the yin to my yang, you know. Actually, I take that back. We were both like on the same trajectory. And we got along really good. It looked more like Robin Big, like with him and I hanging out together. But like, good dude. But yeah, he's like, Obi, you good? You know what I mean? Like, oh, jeez. Everybody was worried about me. Wow. It was funny.
But another, if you don't mind me asking another question, it seems like you have felt the call to reach out to veterans.
Yeah.
Not in a prescriptive way, but in a very natural way. Just trying to reach out and get the message out that...
it's okay.
Right.
That's the message. It's okay. It's going to be okay. You know? And the thing is, like, we're all family, man. You know what I mean? Like, I do have a family, but I don't, like, have a close family. You know? The closest family I've ever felt, and I know my dad's never going to listen to this podcast anyway, so whatever. You know, but it's just the closest family. Hey, Dad, what's up? But there's almost a mean jab right there for my padre. Just kidding. And, the thing is it's like it's the closest family I've ever had, and I think the biggest thing is we're all in it together. You know what I mean? I think, I don't know if it's just because of mushroom trips I had before I went in the military. You know what I'm saying? With that whole oneness and like everything is, I always think, compare things to a ripple. Like we all have these ripple effects in the world, you know, and it's like, you know, trying to have positive ripples versus negative ripples and leave an impact, a good impact. You know what I mean? Because that comes back or it doesn't go anywhere, but a negative impact goes everywhere. Right. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Because like, My philosophy, and I think I use this as a recruiter, maybe I learned it there, is if I gave you a dollar, you might tell somebody, might not. If I stole a dollar from you, you would tell everybody. Be like, dude, Josh O'Brien, man, he stole a dollar. And then, I think just that's it. And when I'm having a bad day, and you'll see me post things like, hey, it's okay to other people, I'm kind of telling myself that as well. You know what I mean? And then the funny thing is the reception that I get from that. It's like, dude, how'd you know? I'm going through this right now. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's how I know. Because, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, a hug is two ways. You know what I mean? Like, you're giving somebody a hug, but you're getting a hug when you give one. You know what I mean? It's kind of that kind of thing. And, you know, this is where I'm a freaking warrior. I did 20 years, blah, blah, blah. And I did the Fallujah and Ramadi and all that. But, yeah, I am still a hippie at heart. You know what I mean? Like, so I guess veterans, we need to take care of ourselves. You know, I never understood like racial pride or heritage. Like, I'm Irish, but I never really got the whole I'm Irish thing. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I love James Brown, but he's got a song on Black and Proud. Whatever. That's cool. But I never really understood it until it came to a veteran. You know what I'm like? Automatically, I see a veteran. And or Marines, especially Marines or CVs, and you know, people that I've been with, not in a sexual manner, obviously, but I mean people that I've been entrenched with, and I look at them and like, that's family. You know what I mean? That's where I think, you know, I'm going a little bit long on this answer, but I think that's why it's just okay. These guys, now I understand where the whole, I don't have that Irish pride, I don't have that German pride, which, you know, my background is. But I do have that military pride where I understand, you know, because we do something, you know, we don't go out to be heroes. We don't want to walk away as heroes. Most of us don't, you know, and you got those guys that love medals and fuck all that. Pardon my French. But, you know. Right.
Talk to the chaplain. All of a sudden, you're speaking French.
Yes. Yeah. So, we don't really do that. We do it for what we're doing, and I don't know. Get soapboxing it. I don't mean to do that, but yeah, we that's why I do it. It's because we're a family, we're all one, and we should just
try. I know since I joined the military, which was later in, you know, when I was older, I didn't mm-hmm. join until I was 34, but I definitely found that all of a sudden I had a lot more ways to relate to my father and my brother, who are also in the military,
right?
Whereas before, you know, I was kind of just really different from them in a lot of ways. All of a sudden we really bonded on,
yeah,
you know, terminology, experiences. There is something very special about the fraternity of the military, no matter what branch you're in.
Right.
I mean, even if you're in the country club, the Air Force, it's still...
MWR of the military, we get it. You bring the girls along. Just kidding. They're all girls. Just kidding. No, what I love too is like, because when I do the events with 95.5 KLS, we'll do like a lot of these biker things, you know, and there's like Top Rocker and Glendale, or not Glendale, but there's Top Rocker, Harley Davidson, and Canoga Park. Not Glendale, Canoga Park, just in case, you know, I don't want to liability suing, but you know, I have a lot of Marines. Former Marines are, you know, I guess there's no such thing as a former Marine, but
right.
A lot of Marines will show up and they'll hang out and stuff like that. And I'll just instantly talk, just be like, man, I should have brought my crayons so you guys can have something to eat, you know? And they just laugh, you know? And then like, it's funny because civilians that I work with look at me like, oh no, dude, these burly bikers are going to jump you. Cause I said, it's like six Marine, you know, six guys with the EGAs, you know, golden pins and silver pins on their biker outfits, you know? Yeah. And I'm talking trash about the Marines and hey, you know, it's like a motorcycle club. It could probably just kill me in a heartbeat, you know. Tie me one leg to each vehicle and one arm to each one, you know. But it's just a joke, you know, because we're all family.
Right. There's like, an understanding, yeah. the commonality that exists.
How, like, which, what branches were your family in?
So my father was Army. He was an officer in intelligence. Military intelligence. I know people say oxymoron, but
I know you probably don't listen. Hey, Dave Mustaine is Christian, just so you know that. He's the lead singer of a group called Megadeth. And there's a song called Hangar 18. I think it's Hangar 18. It's like, military intelligence, two words combined that can't make sense. Possibly I've seen too much. Hey, 18, I know too much. That'll be the outro music for this podcast too. Nice. Watch. Yeah. Like,
then my my brother was, he was Army enlisted, I think Sergeant, Staff Sergeant, something like that. I think when he ended up in the reserves after he did one enlistment, and he was doing something cushy like working for JAG or something. Oh, like that.
There you go.
But at one point he was firing Stingers off of Bradley. That was like the one thing that I remember about what he did. But yeah, so it was all Army, and that was why I started out in the Army.
Yeah.
And then came up to maybe later. Yeah. You know, duty stations, you know, do you want to be in the middle of the country, or do you want to be someplace glamorous like 29 Palms?
I know, right? That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like, because everybody thinks that Navy goes on ships and all this other stuff. Right. Yeah, you and I are both proving that wrong. Right. And you're going where next?
Going to San Diego next, if everything holds up. To be on a floating building.
That's going where?
Nowhere.
Exactly. Once again.
Yeah, I was dreading that. Wondering if the ship was going to be, you know, operational. Or if it was going to be in the yards. And I got the word from the guy who will be replacing it. Yeah, it's going to be in the yards.
Which
that's all right. There's opportunities for lots of community relations projects. Mm. So I think, you know, it'll still be very vibrant ministry. We're going to get out in the community and we'll have a good time.
And hit me up, man. I really enjoyed Homeless Homies Help Day. Yeah. You know, and, you know, if you need any help with that kind of stuff, man, I love coming down to the San Diego area.
Sweet.
We were talking about earlier, it's like living in Hollywood is like living in Disneyland if Disneyland had a cocaine problem. So I try to get down to Coronado in Port Hueneme, up to Port Hueneme from L.A. as often as possible just to feel normal around messed up military.
Maintain sanity.
Yeah, and maintain my sanity of insanity, the military insanity, military intelligence.
Right.
What's some words of wisdom you'd like to say to troops or anything?
It's become the buzz phrase in the chaplain corps, spiritual fitness, especially in the Marine Corps. But beyond it being kind of a party line that the chaplain's supposed to toe around, I'm right. A big believer in it. And my words of wisdom would be that most people think, oh, here comes a chaplain, you know, he's going to talk to me about going to church.
Yeah.
Well, spiritual fitness is so much broader than just sitting in a church. It's really about, you know, what does life mean to you? Now, because, I mean, we've evolved from being hunter-gatherers.
Yeah, right.
So that, you know, really we don't really spend a whole lot of time getting food. We just get it at a grocery store.
Right.
We don't have to, you know, plant it and harvest it. So there has to be some type of meaning in life. So I would say that if I need words of wisdom, it would be for each person to discover what life means to them.
Yeah.
Really, and then hold to that purpose, that kind of higher purpose. Something that's a higher purpose than what you do in the military or what you do in the civilian world. It's the reason that you want to stay alive. You feel like you have this objective that you're trying to complete over the course of your entire life. So that no matter what happens, if you lose your job, things go sour, you still have this higher purpose to work towards. It gives you a sense of perspective that helps you cope with, you know, the ups and downs, the roller coaster ride of life. So I would say this, and take time every day to reinforce that sense of purpose.
Right.
So that could be going to church. It could be, you know, reading in something religious. It could also be reading in something inspirational, something that reinforces that sense of purpose.
And that's cool too, because like you have to have like several hats, you know, as a chaps, man. You can't just be Baptist or whatever, you know. And that's
right.
But I don't want to turn this into, this could be a whole another freaking podcast. We could probably do it another time. But I'm not really the same kind of religious per se, because I still, you know, that whole like the pursuit of Jesus and stuff like that. I kind of went a different way. You know, I just kind of, I believe that, you know, there's a good power, you know what I mean? And I don't want to sound all Jedi, you know, but, you know, it was the Force and, yeah, exactly. To lift stuff and move stuff with your mind. But yeah, I just always think that everything has these effects, you know what I mean? That's, you know, the positivity rubs off in a good way, obviously. And that's, right. You know, that was always cool because you were like really... I don't know, you probably laughed when I left your office. Just kidding. No, but you were always, you know, you really respected other people's beliefs. You didn't just shove the whole, like, Jesus down the funnel.
Oh, certainly. Throats. You know, whether they are, you know, in the unit that I just came from, yeah. We have Odinists, right? We've got a Buddhist. We have one guy that's Muslim. Hey, whatever your faith tradition is or no faith tradition, there's something that you can do to reinforce the values that you carry around. You know, when we stay true to our values, that helps keep the stress down.
Right.
When we violate our values, then, you know, we're not right. We're not whole. And we got to get back to being whole. So that's where, hey, we need that inspiration. You know, whatever that source is for you. I mean, one of the Odinist guys, we got him this poetic book that was part of his faith tradition. And he read in that. I'm all for. I mean, we had a Satanist that, hey, he asked for some help getting some supplies.
Hell and yeah! I literally,
I didn't bother going through the whole order process with the battalion. I just, you know, Amazon a few bucks.
There you go.
Here you go, man. I hope this. You know, as long as you're not, you know, burning something down, or hey, you know, if this is gonna help your morale. You know, there you go. Do it.
I was just thinking of Jabu from Major League. Remember, like, I got to sacrifice a chicken, and they bring him in KFC. You know, like, here you go. He's like waving KFC. Oh, that's so cool, man. But yeah,
so that's one of the things I love about being a chaplain is that, first of all, within the chaplain corps, there's such a broad array of beliefs. Right. You know, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist. So we all get to kind of mix and mingle and learn about each other's faiths. And it's important to have that diversity because there's that diversity in the military so that we can team up and support all these young men and women who put their life on the line to protect the freedoms that we just enjoy.
That's awesome. I mean, that when you can, like, actually bring... That's one thing I miss that you don't have in the... Because nobody's forced diversity in the civilian world. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have the option to unfollow people in the Navy. You know what I mean? You can't just, like, or in the Marine Corps or the military at all. Like, somebody you don't like, you know, just on Facebook. Like, I'm just going to unfollow them, you know? They're posting too much about Clinton. They're posting too much about Trump. They're posting too much about this, the other thing, blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to unfollow them and unfriend them. No, you got to show up and stand next to each other in the same formation every day until it's time for you or them to transfer. You know, it's always fun.
Right.
Any parting words? How about this? You got a violin here.
Sure. I'll play a little ditty. It comes from, the tune is from Ken Burns' Civil War movie. And they play this tune throughout. And I remember when they... read this letter from a Union soldier, wrote it to his wife, knowing that he was getting ready to go into battle, and they read the letter, and they have this music.
It's a regulation-sized violin, ladies and gentlemen. Not the world's smallest one, by the way. Thank you.
So sometimes I play that out in the field right before worship service, just as kind of a call to worship.
Right.
To gather people for a Bible study or...
That's better than a bugle call. Service. I wish they had that. I wish you were with us, man. That's so much better than a bugle call. You got that.
But then it was right before Christmas. It was cold. We were out in the field and just at the chow line, just... So I played some Christmas carols.
No way. That'd be so cool.
That would spark the mood.
I always just told quick one-liners. You know, I'd be like, and then it was like comedy discography. Like I'd say like, yeah. I'd be like, you know, never slept for 100 days because that'd be too long.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, and I'd be like, that's Michelle Berg. You know what I mean? Like I would say jokes and I'd be like, I don't like cocaine, but I love how it smells. That's Argus Hamilton. Argus Hamilton, circa 1978. You know, I'd say the joke, and then I'd say where it came from. You know what I mean? So I was doing two things. It was like making people laugh, but I'm also giving people like, hey, go check out this guy. This is Bill Hicks.
Right. Yeah, you know? You're inviting people to explore the history of comedy.
Exactly. Right? And then in the world I live in, it's the opposite of like the military. When we write manuals, we usually take from five other manuals to make a manual. It's the opposite in comedy. Like, you're a hack. If you take anybody else's anything, that's a big no-no. You know, I mean, that'll ruin most people's career, you know. You don't see Carlos Mencia in too many places anymore, if you know what I'm saying. You do, but not as many as he would have been if he would have wrote his own stuff. Mm. So, anything else you want to say to the Troopy Troops or folks out there listening?
Hey, just want to say appreciate everything that you do, you know, enduring all the, you know, the discomfort, the things that you give up to serve in the military. I'm grateful for the opportunity to support, you know, those that make those kind of sacrifices. And it's a privilege to be in the military and just keep up the good work. It's a great work, and I'm glad that, you know, we still have the freedoms we do, but it's only because people volunteer to protect them. So
that's awesome. Yeah, it's true. I mean, there's nobody drafted anymore.
Right.
We've that happened. That's gone. Everybody volunteered, and so I guess we're gonna punch out like this was a freaking armory. And so my parting words to you, ladies and gentlemen, and folks, and you know whatever you decide to be this week, if you're fluid. But for all those that I've followed, thanks for making me a better leader. For all those I've led, thanks for making me a better person. Much love. Many thanks. Keep your head up. Never let the bastards get down. Fuck the bozos. And much love. Obi loves you. Never forget it.